We didn't get very far last night because we did question and answer, which is also fun. So we kind of have to move on. I'd like to start at verse 64. And we actually finished that verse. Within the seven-part prayer that you do just before you meditate, which includes collecting some instant good karma and clearing out some immediate, most serious bad karmas before you meditate, we're at the first of them, okay? The first is bowing down to your two different people. So I'll just go quickly through. At verse 64, we bow down to the leader of the clan of Shakya. Not much to say, that's Shakya Muni. And not to be confused with Sakya, okay? Sakya is a Tibetan lineage that came 15 centuries later. Shakya is a clan in ancient India, and our Buddha, Gautama Buddha, was the head of his clan, okay? Muni, Shakya Muni means head of that clan. And Muni means, actually, in the old days, it meant a person who didn't talk much and kept mostly silence. They only said important things. So I think if they were around now, we would tend to think they were kind of quiet. And there's a Hindu practice called Mauna, which is from the same root, which means to keep silence, right? It's a practice of keeping silence for a day or a week or 3 years or... How long is that Swami from Mount Madonna big silent? How long? 60 years, okay. So you can keep it for a different length of time. Verse 65, I bow down to the lineage of inspired practice, to the keeper of diamond, compassionate one, gone to bliss, to Tilopa and Naropa, who looked upon the ultimate, to Dombipa and Atisha, ultimate in their glory. So normally we think of Lord Atisha as being involved with the compassion lineage, which he learned in Indonesia from Lama Serlingba, Suvarnadvipa. But here he's listed as a Lama of the Tantric practice. And we have here the High Lamas of the Tantric practices. Tilopa, who was the teacher of Naropa. And then we have Naropa. And there's a nice carving of him on the upper left side here on the 52. These carvings come from a version of the 8,000 verses that was carved in Tibet just before Tibet was lost. So it was carved in a place called Shulparkan, which is the printery of the Potala Palace, which is at the base of the palace. And I think it was probably the last work ever carved there before it was destroyed. And it has about 2,000 carvings in it of all the lamas of our lineage. And there's some beautiful ones there, very beautiful. So this one, which you see on page 50 in the upper left, 52 in the upper left, it's a nice carving of Master Naropa making a tantric offering. It shows him in his yogi's form and sitting on a tiger skin, okay? It also mentions, the verse mentions Dombipa, who is below Master Shantideva in the small box. And he's taming a tiger. This is a representative of secret practice, is compared to riding a tiger, because it's difficult and risky. And if you fall off, you get chewed up, okay? But Dombipa is famous for his partner practice. He had a wonderful practice of a Buddhist partner. And of course, Naropa, who's in the upper left, was the partner of Niguma, Lady Niguma, whose yoga we do frequently. All right. 66, on to the lineage of Bodhisattva teachings. I bow down to the lineage of far-reaching deeds, Maitreya, the loving one, Asanga, Vasubandhu, Vimuktisena, Paramasena, Vinitasena, Yasha Shri, Haribhadra, the Tukasales, and Suvarna Dvipa. So that ends in the person from who lived in Indonesia, who taught Atisha, who brought the teachings on compassion to Tibet. Okay? So, and it's very interesting to go to Indonesia now, which is now a Muslim country. There's a very beautiful mountain there that was carved into a mandala, probably about 1,000 years ago, and then covered up by the jungle called Borobudur. And we went there and had meetings with them. We might work on a book together. It's a UN heritage site. And a volcano went off recently nearby and jammed up their ancient, what do you call it, rain spout system, which is in the pyramid. And so because of that ancient, very clever system of rain spouts, in a country which is raining much of the time in a jungle, the stone carvings have survived for 1,000 years because the water doesn't stay on the stone. It goes into this special system of drains. And recently a volcano went off nearby and filled up the drains with ash, volcanic ash. So the UN is helping to clear it out, and we're helping also. We're doing a book together with them about the Wheel of Life, which is depicted in the mountain. The story of the Wheel of Life, the history of it, King Udayana, is carved in the mountain, and they didn't know. They didn't know what was there, and we helped them identify it. And so we're going to be doing a book together. That's why we're doing the Wheel of Life teachings in New York, because we're working on that book together. So the Lama from that island 1,000 years ago taught Lord Atisha about compassion, the teachings on bodhicitta, and then he brought them to Tibet. So, and that's where our lineage comes from. I put a picture of Kuan Yin. I like this one. It's a special form of Kuan Yin that was popular in the Song Dynasty in China, which was also about the same time as Atisha, 1,000 years ago. So this form of Kuan Yin is considered to be a relaxing Buddha, who's relaxing, and it's a form of Maitreya, the Buddha Maitreya, Kuan Yin. Some people say Chenrai Sik, Avalokiteshvara. But what's interesting is that between India and China, he became a lady. And Kuan Yin is a female bodhisattva. So it's kind of sweet that the bodhisattva that represents compassion, Avalokiteshvara in this case, is a male in India, but when he came to China, became a female. And I think it's very beautiful just that that compassionate energy of a mother, of a person who has children, is reflected in that bodhisattva. Okay, and the word Kuan Yin means the one who listens to the cries of the world. Okay, so it could be related to Avalokiteshvara, the meaning of Avalokiteshvara. Okay, looking down on the world, Avaloka. Okay, all right. Next. Verse 67, I bow down to the lineage of the profound view, to Manjushri and to Nagarjuna, who destroyed both sides, the idea that things can exist and the idea that they cannot exist, to Chandrakirti, to Vidya Kokila the elder, to the realized father and son who defended Lord Buddha's true thought, and to many other masters. So, the carving from Tibet, a very beautiful carving of Arya Nagarjuna on the left. And there's a story. Nagarjuna means, Naga means like dragon. I think what we in Germanic or English culture call a dragon was a Naga in India. And they are said in, you know, Northern European culture to be interested in hoards of jewels and they hoard things and they sit on piles of jewels or gold. And the same thing is said of Nagas in India. These dragon-like creatures are said to be very possessive and they live in caves, huge lairs, and they lie on treasures. But the ones in India, in addition to gold and jewels, they like books. They like scriptures. So there was a time, 1800 years ago, almost in the time of Christ, that some books were missing in this world. And then this monk said he would go to the land of the dragons and recover those books. And he went to the land of the Nagas. And they are speaking beings. They can speak. They're very intelligent. And you can negotiate with them. And he negotiated with them, and they were impressed by him. So he became a master of the Nagas. So Arjuna, of course, is the archer in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna teaches, and a mighty warrior, one of the mightiest warriors recorded in Indian history. So Naga Arjuna means the warrior, spiritual warrior, who gained control over the dragons and talked them into sharing their books. So he brought back from the land of the dragons some scriptures that are now in the Kangyur that we were missing in this world. Okay? All right. So I like Nagarjuna, and I like that picture, because they say that the Nagas came up to this world when it was hot in India. They would form a cover over his head. Probably he had a bald spot. And very convenient, right, Phil? To have a Naga to cover you during the sun. And then on the right there is Lord Atisha, who's coming in the next verse. I bow down to the lamas of the Kadampa, to Atisha, who kept the highest advices of learning and of practice, to Dromtunje, the forefather of the teachings of the Kadampa, and to masters such as the four high practitioners and the three close brothers. These are references to early Kadampa lamas, like Potowa, Gombawa, Sharawa, Dromtunje, Lord Atisha. And I put Lord Atisha there because you can see on his left side is a stupa. And when we get to the teachings on confession or clearing your conscience daily, on a daily basis before you meditate, he held that practice very strongly. And even though he traveled by horse through Tibet and he lived many years out of a suitcase from his horse, saddlebag, he would, every day he would get off his horse. He carried this heavy stupa with him. And he would get off the horse and go off the road for a ways and sit in some trees, and he would do his confessions to this stupa, which he carried around with him. So I thought that was nice to have it there. You know, I don't know, you and me were too lazy to do a six times book. He carried around this heavy stupa on his horse for, I don't know, 20 years, and stopped and did his confessions from time to time. Okay, Kadampa is a name of the early Buddhists of Tibet. And they are interesting. They were, a lot of them were lay people. They were family people. They started small Dharma centers in their cities or their towns. And those centers were passed down to the children usually. And that's how Buddhism began in Tibet. It wasn't really till later that it became monastic, that it became monks and nuns. So in the beginning, there was a very, very beautiful flowering in Tibet of Buddhism, in which many lay people traveled to India and studied with Indian masters. And then they came back and taught each other. So the lineage trees of those times, 1,000 years ago, are very confusing. They look like a tumbleweed. And this guy was a student of that person, but he taught him also the other subject. And it was a very sweet time in Tibet. Very, very, what do you call it? Exciting time in which family people, people who didn't never became monks and nuns, taught each other, trained each other in what they learned from Buddhism. And I think we're in a similar time now. I feel personally that the immediate future of Buddhism in this world will not be monastic. I'm happy to be a monk. I love being a monk. I love being in a monastery. But I feel that it's a time in the world that it seems to me that Buddhism will be passed on by lay people. And it's great and it's wonderful because they have more experience in real life. They have worked. They have had bringing up children is a huge education. And I think people who have those qualifications, having brought up children, having struggled to make a living, in this world, they are uniquely qualified teachers. They are good teachers. So I'm happy with the way we're doing it. We have 303 ACI teachers in the world. And I would say 95% of them are lay people, and that's fine. I like it. Okay? It doesn't mean you shouldn't be a nun or a monk if you feel that it's a strong calling. But I think most people are happy with the normal way of life, and they'd like to use Buddhism to enhance that life. So that's fine. Okay, that's a Kadampa. That's the old Kadampa way. Then there's a... Excuse me for slurping. Hang on. Hello. There's a Buddhist group in England, based in England, which has taken the name Kadampa. But of course it's a much older name from 1,000 years ago. And it refers to the early Buddhists of Tibet. Okay. All right. Next. 69. I bow down to the Father and his sons, along with all their line, to Jetsun Kapa, innovator from the land of snows, to Gyaltsab Jay, king of deductive reasoning, and to Kedub Jay, lord of the open and secret words. This verse, I'm going to read it in Tibetan, because it's very, 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 very famous, okay? Kang chen shing de so jay tsong kapa, ngô tob rig bay wan chu Gyaltsab Jay, nong ap tem be da po Kedub Jay, yab se gyu per che la chak tsa la. If you want to start learning Tibetan, if you want to learn a verse, this verse 69 is extremely famous, okay? And it's become so famous in our immediate lineage that it's used before eating food, okay? It's used as a grace. So if you wanted to learn a verse of Tibetan, this would be a good place to start, okay? Kanchen Shingde Sulje. This is a reference to a... Sulje means... I wrote innovator, I think. And this refers to people in this world. People like an Arya Nagarjuna or a Sangha who saw emptiness directly and then used that insight to interpret Buddhism for their world, for their planet of their times. So they didn't change the content, but because they understood emptiness directly, they were able to make a fresh presentation in the world. So they're called Shingda Sulje, innovator or inventor, but not in the sense of making up a new teaching, but in pioneering ways of presenting Buddhism to their modern world. So Shingda, Shing means what? Wood? Wood or tree? Shing means field, loton. Haiton, Shing means wood or tree. Da means horse. So Shingda is wagon, okay, wagon. Sul means a system. J here with the ao, with the prenasal, means to open. Like to open a door is called J. So Shingda Sulje means a person who puts together a new contraption, like a car, like Henry Ford or something like that, okay? So Shingda Sulje is a very big compliment. There are only two historical Shingda Suljes. This is Arya Nagarjuna and Arya Sangha. And then, so it's a big compliment that in the Tibetan tradition, we call Jetsun Kapa the third, you know, inventor number three, you know. And in 2,500 years, he's only the third person who was able to take his insight into reality and turn it into a new presentation for modern times that would fit modern times, but not lose the accuracy of the ancient teaching. Well trained in ancient teaching, and then very skilled in presenting it to the new world. Okay, that's called Shingda Sulje. Then Gyaltsab Jay was very famous in logic, and We debate his text on logic in the winter debates. Every winter, we do a full month of debating competition with the other monasteries. It's like, what do you call it? The Olympics of debating. And each monastery, each of the six great colleges of the Dalai Lama's tradition, two from Ganden, two from Sera, two from Debung, and sometimes we add Tashin Lumbo, which is the Panchen Lama's seat. Those seven colleges will debate with each other for a month, and sometimes all night. And very, 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 it's like, wow. It's like the NCAA basketball thing, and it's very, I don't know how to say, exhausting and very, very wonderful, because you get the best and the brightest. 50 young monks from each monastery are chosen to compete with each other for a month. So naturally they become friends. And later they become the abbots of the monasteries and the heads of the monasteries. And then they know each other already because they debated with each other for years. So typically a monk might go to two winter debate sessions or three in their life. And I was lucky I was able to go to four. And you go up to a very high standard of debating. But the book, the main book is Gyaltsebje, Tsongkhapa's main disciple. And very, very fantastic book about debating. And you only cover a few pages in a month. You know, in hundreds of hours of debating, you only cover a few pages. He's extraordinary. Very difficult and very beautiful. Then they mentioned Kedubje, who's Jetsun Kapa's other great disciple, who really is known for his writings on the secret Buddhism, Tantric Buddhism. Okay. Very great commentator, especially the Kalachakra Tantra and similar subjects. He also wrote an extraordinary book on logic, which is not as popular as Gyaltsebje's, but it's a good secret weapon if you're debating, if you also have that one. So I used it in the winter debates, and I'm trying to work with Venerable Nyingbo to translate that, but it's going to take a while. I think we finished 9 pages in 3 years or something. Okay. Then I like this photo. This is called Ngandama. Ngandama means looks like me. And the Nga means me. Da means similar. Ma is a feminine ending which is used for prayers and for statues. So Ngandama means the statue or the image that looks like me. And this image was crafted during Tsongkhapa's life, during Jetsun Kapa's life. And it's the only image we have of his real face. And he was known to have prominent ears, which in Buddhism is considered good. Like you're close to becoming a Buddha. Ken Rinpoche had huge ears and big earlobes, and you know, we believe that's a good sign that you might become a Buddha soon. And he had a very prominent nose. He had a beak, hawk nose, and his enemies, which he had many, called him Mr. Big Nose. They refused to call him Tsongkhapa. They called him Big Nose from the East. He was from East Tibet. So I like it because usually they clean up the face of these holy people and make them very vanilla, like modern music with the electronics, you know. There's never any variation in the drum because it's electric, you know. And so I like that image. It was destroyed in 1959 when Tibet was lost. That's why it's black and white. There's only one photo taken of it, taken by a... That's a long story. Someday somebody should write the story, but the American Secret Service, OSS, sent a mission to Tibet during World War II. They asked if they could come and negotiate an overland route between India and China, because India and China were both on the American side in World War II. And the Tibetans said no. So they put a bunch of American military spies on a bomber headed by Leo Tolstoy's nephew, Colonel Tolstoy, and they crash-landed in Tibet on purpose, and they said they ran out of fuel. But it was a last attempt to negotiate with the Dalai Lama and the cabinet of the, because they weren't allowed to come in the border. And they crash-landed near Lhasa. Ken Rinpoche saw the plane. You know, everybody went out and looked at the plane because they never saw a plane. And these spies took a lot of cool photos of Tibet before they were thrown out of Tibet. They didn't succeed. The mission failed. But only because of that mission we have these very rare photographs of statues and images that were destroyed in 1959. Okay? So I like it a lot. The hands were covered by a kata in the photo, and then my mom helped me restore them many years ago, and we doubled over his lapel here, and so that's kind of cool. All right, let's go to verse 7. I like it. I think it's a blessing to look at that photo. So when you do your meditations, look at the photo. This is Jetsokapa's real face. Okay. Number 71. I bow down to my spiritual guides. You are eyes to see each of a billion scriptures. You are the ultimate entry point for the fortunate who seek to travel to freedom. You show me things with skillful means driven by your love. I had this breakthrough the other day. I was thinking about the word skillful means. And it hit me that you could call it by hook or crook. You know, get your student enlightened, whatever you got, whatever it takes, sneaky or outright or punch them or whatever it takes, get them enlightened, you know. That's called upaya in Sanskrit or tapke in Tibetan, and it means skillful means. It means unusual actions to wake up your students and get them going. They're not always violent, but they are always unexpected, you know. Like they might dump water on your head or, you know. Rinpoche asked me to dig a tree trunk out by hand, oak. It took 3 years in the front yard. And I said, why don't we just bring in a bulldozer? No, you have to dig it out, you know. And then I dug for 3 years and finally got it out, you know. And then he's like, I think our cesspool needs moving. And then I had to dig up the cesspool, huge cesspool, and move the gravel in it. And it took another year or something. And I don't know, supposed to teach me something, right? Like that, okay. All right, that's tapke. The tapke is driven by love, right? They do strange things to wake up a student, but it's all because they love them, okay? And I'm very aware where that Ken Rinpoche loved me, very aware, strongly aware that he did it for my sake, you know? And it's hard to be a teacher and be disliked by your student after you push them, you know? So it's easier to just be a nice guy and, you know, let the student hang themselves. But it takes a lot of love to be tough on a student. Okay? All right. Next verse. By the way, verse 71, starting with Rabjam, is also a famous prayer, a famous grace before eating food. So if you wanted to memorize that one, that's also extremely famous grace before eating. Okay? 72, I bow down to the house, host of angels and close angels, to the secret collection, highest bliss, low diamond and Haruka, to the Lady of Glory and to the Lord of Terror, to the countless saviors of all the teachings in all four groups of the secret word. So Tantra or secret Buddhism has four classes. There are four groups of the Tantric teachings. And he's listed some from the highest group of secret teachings called Anuttara Yoga. And the Tibetan is quite difficult at this point because he abbreviates drastically. De-ge Heruka is And he said, Dechok, He Vajra, and then Heruka, okay? These are three high tantras, okay? Dechok is Sambara, Chakrasambara, for example. And gay is a misspelling, so it's doubly secret, okay? He Vajra in Sanskrit. The He in He Vajra means what? Hey, it means hey, dude. Okay, so the hey in hey vajra means hey, dude. And then in ancient Tibetan, that hey is ka or kaye. These are the two forms of hey in ancient Tibetan. And then it got corrupted to gye, which is a different word and it means to please somebody. So unless you know that, you could never translate this verse. Okay. And then he says Heruka. And then Belchen, and Jigche is Yamantaka in Sanskrit, or Bhairava. Jigche means makes you scared, so we call Lord of Terror. A BH in Sanskrit often comes into Greek or something as a PH, and then changes to F in modern English. So Bhairava means fear. Okay, the word pyre means fear. It came into English as fear. And then his other name is Yamantaka. Yama means Lord of Death. Antaka means to put an end to something. Anta means end, came into English as end. And ka means the doer, so ender, like Ender's Game. And so Yamantaka means the one who kills the Lord of Death. Okay, so the fear in this case is not some scary tantric deity who kills chickens and belongs to a cult or something like that. It means, in the Bible, there's a very moving exchange between Jesus and some demons who have inhabited some pigs. And the demons are frightening the local people, and Jesus confronts those demons. And then they see Jesus as a demon. Got it? Because Jesus is going to kill them. And there's this whole heavy exchange. And then he shoves those demons into a herd of pigs and drives them off a cliff over the sea and kills them. So this is what it means is that to a demon, an angel looks like a devil. Got it? Okay. So when we say Bhairava or Yamantaka, and there's this fearful, what do you call it, aspect to that being, it doesn't mean they are nasty or horrible or mean. Or I've read many things online, many people criticizing Yamantaka. It's stupid. It's extremely, what do you call it, height of stupid, you know. It's a supreme ignorance being broadcast. And it just means that to your anger, your understanding looks like the devil. So we paint your understanding as how it looks to your anger or your jealousy. Okay, why? Because they're going to die. Your jealousy will die. If you continue on this path, your jealousy will die, your anger will die. And they don't like it. They fight. They fight back. Okay, it's a very noticeable trend, okay, in your life. The heavier, the better your practice gets, the more obstacles will come. Okay, if you don't have any obstacles, you probably should worry. It means they don't consider you a threat. They leave you alone. Okay, seriously. All right. Next verse. So that's bowing down to the high lamas of the secret teachings. Verse 73. I bow down to the 1,000 perfect Buddhas who will appear within this eon, and in those blessed years accomplish all they planned. You made your prayers together for us in future times. You labored to gather the karma in miraculous amounts, and all the deeds you do will spread in the universe forever. So this is a prayer specifically to the 997 Buddhas who are still to come in this eon, on this planet. There will be 1,000 Buddhas, Gautama was number three. Who's number four? Maitreya. Maitreya is coming, okay? Be, what do you call it? Have heart. Have heart? Be of good cheer. Close, very close. Okay, Maitreya is very close. We live in good days. These are sacred times. And in a way, your work is contributing to that. So Maitreya is close here. Okay. All right. And there will be 1,000 total Buddhas in this eon. Okay. And the reason they come to this world is because they made a commitment together. They met together and they made a commitment to go to someplace bad. Okay. Like DCI, we have two kinds of tours. One tour, we go visit rich countries and we move their money. And then we go to poor countries and spend the money to serve them. And then we're always broke because it balances out exactly. So we go to difficult places like Vietnam or Mongolia, where they can't pay any, Bulgaria, they can't pay anything. And we just go because it's a bad place. We try to go to hard. Bodhisattvas prefer difficult places. We don't go much to Paris. Okay? And we don't go to Australia, for example, because they have so many lamas there already, because it's close to India. So we try to choose places where there aren't enough teachers. We don't go to Argentina much because we have good teachers there already. We have Carola and her group. So we try to go to places, we try to focus on places that are new or where it's difficult financially, economically, the country is in difficulty or violence and things like that. So we try to, oftentimes we'll try to go to difficult places. And that's a tradition of the 1,000 Buddhas. Okay. All right, verse 74. I bow down to the 8 who have gone to bliss, to good name, jewel, fine gold, the one beyond all sadness, singer of the teachings, to the seer, to medicine Buddha and Shakyamuni. May all the vastness of your prayers and all the wishes of your hearts come completely true. This is a group of 8 famous Buddhas in this world. One whose name you'll recognize, beyond all sadness, is what in Sanskrit? Do you know? Sadness is shoka. Shoka. And it means to be dried out because you cried so much. The Russian word for dry is sukhoi, and it comes from, desiccated comes from that, dried out. So not dried out is Ashoka. So we believe that Ashoka was a great Dharma king, and there's a Buddha named Ashoka. Okay. All right. Next. Verse 75. I bow down to the high Dharma of all three of the ways, to the mother of the victors and the perfection of wisdom. And every other teaching, to those that put an end to the seed, the darkness, the source of pain, and rip from its very roots the agony of the pain itself. This is a reference to the teachings on emptiness, okay? The perfection of wisdom. So in this verse, we are bowing down to the teachings on emptiness. Because it tears out pain in two forms. First, pain as a result, which is already here. And then secondly, pain as a cause, pain that will come in the future. So we can go back to the kitchen, back to the moment that your boyfriend is criticizing you, or your wife or your husband, partner is criticizing you in the kitchen. And then as they, you know, you walk in carrying your briefcase, you set it down and you look up and they're in your face and they're criticizing you about something. And you, what do you always say? They came after me for no reason at all. That's, in Buddhism, that's a joke. Okay? That's like the ultimate joke, you know? Like, yeah, for no reason at all, you know? No, I just came home and they started criticizing me, you know? I didn't have time to do anything. I just walked in the door and they started criticizing me. I didn't say anything yet. And they started criticizing me. And then in your mind you say, for no reason at all. And then in Buddhism there's no such thing, right? That for no reason at all doesn't exist. That's emptiness. Okay? The lack of no reason at all is emptiness. Okay? So, in that moment, you are having pain And if you respond with anger, you plant new pain. So in this verse, we are praying to the teachings on emptiness, which at the moment your partner criticizes you, if you turn them on, you stop pain and you stop the cause of pain, cause of more pain. Okay, you shut up. And you, I always find it, to break those situations, you can say, excuse me, I have to go to the toilet and I'll be back. And you can continue criticizing me. But you break the moment, you know. I in extreme situations, I'll drop a dish or take off my pants or something. And no, it really breaks the whole thing. Like it's just, you know, they're like, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, go ahead, you can criticize me in a few minutes. I just have to finish this, you know. Or you drop a dish and they're like, what the, you know, and you clean up the glass. And it's better than having a fight, you see? Break the moment, break the tension. And I guess there might be lots of households with no dishes left after a while. Don't let a bad situation become a cause for more bad situations. Don't respond, okay? Don't respond negatively, okay? All right. And that's taking refuge in the emptiness, okay? Verse 76. I bow down to the great ones, the eight close sons. Gentle voice, holder of the diamond, loving eyes, heart of the earth, destroyer of obstacles, heart of the sky, and loving one, and perfect goodness too. So this is a group of eight famous bodhisattvas who served Lord Buddha, who were close to Lord Buddha in the time of Lord Buddha. Some of the names will be familiar to you. Gentle voice is Manjushri, technically Manjugosha, Kosha, but another name for Manjushri. Holder of the diamond, Vajradhara. Loving eyes, Avalokiteshvara. Kshiti Garba, you don't know, I think. Heart of the sky, Akasha Garba. Loving one, Maitreya. So in the time of Lord Buddha, these beings were disguised as bodhisattvas. They were not Buddhas. They did not show themselves as Buddhas. They showed themselves as eight bodhisattvas who were very close in the... They hung out with Lord Buddha. They were always around Lord Buddha. And so they were called the eight close sons. Okay. Later, in later times, they were recognized to be Buddhas themselves. Okay. All right. 77. I bow down to those realized beings, the self-made Buddhas, to those who without any help plumb the depths of the wisdom of the self-made ones, the self-made victors, by meditating carefully on that profound concept, the 12 links of dependent creation. This is a reference to a type of practitioner we call a self-made Buddha, okay? Pratyeka Buddha. Because they have studied with thousands of teachers in their past lives, then when they're born into this world, they don't need a direct teacher. And classically, they run into the teaching on the 12 links of dependent origination and the wheel of life that we're teaching in New York. I think, when is it, Mercedes? Like February? February? 10th and 11th? So we'll continue the teaching on the wheel of life in New York. But they specialize in that teaching, and it gives them great insights into emptiness, and they reach nirvana on their own. So they're called self-made Buddhas with a small b. They're not enlightened. They're just called, that kind of nirvana is called self-made Buddha, but they're not Buddha. Okay, they're not a full Buddha. Okay, that's why we call other Buddhas full Buddhas. Okay? Like if you're curious why they're Samyak Sambuddhaya, right? Full Buddha, fully enlightened person. Then the question comes up, what? Are there like partially enlightened Buddhas? And the answer is, yes, these guys, okay? But they're not real Buddhas. Okay. All right. Next verse, 78. I bow down to the 16 elders and all those in their retinue, serving at Lord Buddha's decree, upholding the banner of the Dharma, to the one born in the branches and the undefeatable, to the forest hermit and the patriarch, to the son of the lady of the diamond, to good one and the golden child, to the great Bharadvaja of the gold and the realized being Bakula, to dark planet and the trail, to Bharadvaja the mendicant, the guide, dragon's hoard, the concealer, and to the unbroken. These are 16 famous arhats from ancient India. Two of them have the same name, Bharadvaja, so they call one Bharadvaja of the gold and they call other Bharadvaja of the mendicant. Okay, so don't be confused. There's two Bharadvajas. Could you recognize anybody there? Trail, that's Lamchung. Who's that? Yeah, he's that guy who had to sweep the temple and, you know, couldn't remember Om when he got the Bur. Om Bur Bhavascha Tatsavitur Varenyam Bargo Devasyadi Vahi Diyoyo Nah Prachodayat. What is that? Gayatri mantra, most famous mantra in Hinduism. He forgot Bu when he got to Om, and he forgot Om when he got to Bu. And then, you know, he practiced cleaning up his room and he became an arhat. Then he got to be in the 16. Okay. These arhats are classically related in our current tradition to long life practices. So in New Jersey, we used to do the ritual of the 16 elders. They're called Neten Chuduk. We used to do it fairly often to request Rinpoche to live a long life, you see. So this is traditional prayers of the 16 arhats. Okay. All right, next page. Verse 79 is a reference to female Buddhas who wander around the world and enlighten people, get them enlightened. I think they're usually disguised as yoga teachers or something. Anyway, according to our practice, any woman on this planet is especially suspicious and could very well be an enlightened being. Therefore, it's considered a very high practice if you can find one of them and you can try to practice with them, then you can get enlightened faster. So in our immediate tradition of the Dalai Lamas, we're supposed to honor women much more, especially honor ladies and respect them and show honor to them. I heard a nice story about Lama Supa Rinpoche, that he was driving through India one day in the back of a car, and they had a bunch of offerings. They were headed to some temple, and he saw a young lady like carrying firewood on her back on the side of the road. And he had some insight in that she could be Vajrayogini. She could be an angel. And he ordered the car stopped, and he jumped out, and he bowed, he prostrated to her, and then he took all the offerings out of the trunk and offered them to her, and then got in the car and went on, you know. That's kind of a nice practice, okay? So I put the ladies who danced in Guadalajara, and we had an incredible flamenco dancers. There's four of them. They each had a different color of light on them that matched the four modes. And Alejandro had this beautiful idea. And I would love to bring them here to Phoenix, have them perform. The guitar player is the best I've ever seen in my life. And I'd really like to take them to Beijing and just turn on the Chinese, because the Chinese people who came to Guadalajara were so happy. They took flamenco class. They taught us flamenco. And they were awesome. And, you know, one day I'm going to try to get them to China and have them dance. But to me, they just, at that moment, they looked like, it wasn't hard to imagine that they were angels, you know, that they were deities. So in this verse, we bow down to all the angels on this planet who are unrecognized, that we're not sure who they are. Okay, any lady could be one of them. Okay, I bow down to the multitude of the angels of the sky who cover all three realms, who see beyond the seen, who can appear anywhere at all, at will. Women of miracles who from their holy paradise, the heaven of the sky, look down in love on those of us who try to do our practice as mothers gaze on their children. Okay, so they like us. Okay, They're happy with us. We're not great saints, but we're trying, right? We're like doing our little songs and dances and stuff. Okay. All right. Verse 80. And then we'll take a break, okay? I'll give you about 10 more minutes. We'll take a break. I bow down to the host of guardians, protectors of the Dharma, who in ancient days knelt before the conquering Buddhas and swore they would protect all those who rightly practiced the Dharma, as if they were their very own beloved sons and daughters. So there are lots of enlightened beings who many, many countless years ago in other planets, in front of other Buddhas or our Buddha, they knelt down and they swore, I will protect anyone who tries to practice the Dharma, okay? And they're called guardians or protectors. And they're very nice if you can make contact with them, even in your imagination. If you're having a hard time with your practice and things get hard, then you can ask them for help, okay? Dharmapala. Pala is an ancient word meaning protector. Pa is a root that means to protect. And it came into the word pastor. A pastor, one who protects their flock. So nowadays there's a controversy among the Tibetan people, especially about one of the protectors. There are hundreds of protectors. There's one that in the past was traditionally used during, times of conflict between our lineage and other lineages. So people would do like black magic and try to call on this protector and try to hurt people in another tradition, which is totally against all of our vows, specifically against our vows, especially our tantric vows. We're not allowed to look down on other traditions we're not allowed to speak badly about any other religious tradition. This is our secret vows. But it was misused. The protector was abused. So His Holiness the Dalai Lama asked people, please don't use that particular one because of its history, because of the history attached to it. And it was controversial because his own teacher was very heavily into that particular protector in a nice way. Tujan Rinpoche, who was my teacher's teacher, was very much into that and taught it to many lamas. So the lamas were conflicted. They said, well, we promised Trijang Rinpoche that we would practice it. But the Dalai Lama said, I understand that, and Trijang Rinpoche was my teacher also. But just out of respect for other traditions, I suggest we voluntarily just give it up. And there are thousands of other protectors. We could just choose one. So that became a big source of controversy among Tibetans. I personally am not involved in that controversy. That's one that I'm not involved in. And I'm not interested in... I think it's foolish. I think it's unwise. I think it's sad. I think it's just a waste of time and energy, like most controversies. And I'm just not involved with it. So if anyone asks you, am I involved? I'm not involved. I was never given that teaching. I never practiced that teaching. But I understand both sides. I see each side's point. One side takes it as a religious freedom. I should be able to practice what I would like because I don't intend to hurt anyone. And then the other side says, well, the Dalai Lama is, many of you recognize him as your teacher. And if your teacher asks you to do something, you should agree to do that. So there's a controversy. And I sympathize with both sides. I understand how both sides feel. But I feel that to have a controversy like that is very much against what we're doing and what our goals are. So I think it's... I wish they would kind of sit down together and have a mediator. And they could probably work out some kind of compromise. But unfortunately, that hasn't happened. So I think... it'd be wise for us just to avoid that whole controversy. It's a very sad and, destructive and thing. So that's my opinion, okay? Okay, next. So when people ask you, do you honor a Dharma protector, you can say, yeah, but not that one. you know, or we're not involved with that. But of course, we have hundreds of Dharma protectors. Okay, somebody has to help protect the Dharma. Okay, all right. Verse 81. I bow down to the four great kings, each with their own group of followers whom they have subdued, and each protecting one of the gates, to the guardian of the land, to the highness, to dreadful gaze, and to prince of learning. These are four great, powerful, worldly beings who are supposed to be protecting a certain part of our planet. Okay, and we can talk more about it when we study Abhidharma. Okay. I haven't taught Abhidharma yet. That's a 12-year project also. So we'll have to figure out what we do about that. Okay, 82. And finally, I split my body into as many bodies as there are atoms in this universe. And with each of these bodies, I throw myself down and bow in perfect devotion to anyone anywhere whose deeds deserve my honor. I like this verse, 82. You can kind of skip to 82. Okay, if you don't want to go through all the lamas and lineage and all that. By the way, the lamas and lineage are coming later. This is just a preview. These are the highlights of the big lamas, but we have many more coming. But personally, if you have to go to work as the comptroller of city of Colorado Springs or whatever you are, and you're busy, then you can just go to verse 82 and say, I bow down to everybody who's doing nice stuff, you know, and... whether you lived before or whether you're living now, you know, I bow down to you. You're special. I like you. And I just wanted to say thank you and acknowledge you. Okay? Then I like that verse because you can include Dorina. Who's Dorina? Who's Dorina? Nicole Vigna. Where are you? Who is she? She's the lady at Costco. What's wrong with you? Dorina at Costco, Epi, her assistant. You know, like you go in and she's like, we're like, ah, we need this meditation book. She's like, calm down, you know. She actually said that. She said to Bao Jingmei, she looks like she's meditating. She looked at me and said, I don't think you're meditating, you know. You're too nervous about this book, you know. And then she said, we need it, you know, we need it tomorrow. And she says, which is impossible, you know. And she said, okay, get out of here, I'll take care of it, you know. Just leave, okay? Let me get to work. I'll take care of it. I'll bring the staff in at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning and we'll finish it, you know, we'll bind it. And we're like, so you can bow to her also. You see what I mean? Anyone who's cool... anyone who's amazing, anyone who's doing some special thing in the world, there are thousands and thousands of them. You know, I would like to bow to the corporate commissioners of Arizona who, you know, let solar survive, you know, and but also gave something to the electric company, nice compromise, and I bow to them like that. So when you get to verse 82, you can bow to anybody who's doing cool stuff, all right? I like that. You don't have to restrict yourself to famous Buddhist saints, okay? You can bow down to Dorina and Epi and corporate commission, okay? That's okay. That's even better, I think. Okay. We're at the second of the seven parts, which is making offerings. And I think it's a good time to take a break. We're about halfway through the time. And it's a natural break in the subject matter. So I believe there's a, what do you call that? Bake sale? Still going on? Am I right? Yeah. So feel free to, because it's not kosher, we don't know that it's kosher, we ask that you keep the desserts outside. But please do... buy some small sweet thing that won't make you fall asleep in the second half of the class, and then pay $20, okay? Because I'm very depressed. I didn't realize that we weren't sending any students to the monastery this year because we didn't make enough money, and that kind of disturbed me. So I would really appreciate it if if you would be generous and give for that. Because I think it's a sad thing. I didn't know. I would have pulled out some tricks to raise more money. But let's make sure we get people there next fall. Okay? So eat lots of cookies. Anything else, Esther? Have a nice break. See you in about 10, 15 minutes. Okay, we'll start. We have about half an hour, and I'm not going to cut into your break time because I know you have to practice your songs and stuff. Me too. So one thing I'd like to talk about is, as you probably well aware, we have 31 students doing a 3-year, 3-month, 3-day retreat at our university, Diamond Mountain, outside of Tucson. They are really extraordinary people. Many of them studied with me in New York before my 3-year retreat, so in the late 90s. Many of them finished 7 years of study in New York. And then I went on retreat for 3 years, and then I taught another 7 years of advanced subjects at Diamond Mountain. And then their senior paper was to do a 3-year retreat. And they did, you know. And I know there's, of course, you know, there were problems at the 3-year retreat. Right now, it's very beautiful. It's going extremely well. They're extremely happy. Their practice is awesome. Their meditation is awesome. 5 of them spoke last weekend. We cried bucket of tears over the beauty of their presentations. And they're in a very sweet spot, finally. I told them, you did it. It wasn't elegant, but you did it. And they're like, and they laughed. And they're in a very sweet, good space, and I'm proud of them, and I'm proud of the whole place, and everyone really pulled together through some very, very difficult times. Now we have another, you know, so for me, and Venerable Jigme especially, it's been a great challenge to feed them for 3 years. We fundraised, I believe, about $700,000, and we had a very intricate network of sponsors and, you know, all kinds of blackmail techniques to get their monthly donations out of them. And all over the world, there are hundreds of people helping the retreat. And that's the only way that we could keep it going. It's very expensive. But we promised them we would do it. I promised them. I said, if you stay in 3-year retreat, I'll get you food. That's my commitment. And we did. So we should be proud of that. And things are going well as far as the fundraising. And I think I should remind you that they each built their own cabin, mostly. Most of them built their own cabin with help of friends. And it was a tremendous achievement. And Lama Christy helped do that. And she worked like crazy and she did a great thing. And there are 30 cabins there, and they're cool. They're very cool. And they are in a beautiful valley. Cell phones don't reach there. My cell phone doesn't reach there. And it's a perfect situation for a long retreat. And those people who gave up all of their money to build their cabins, and they're solar, they're all off the grid, and they're all compost toilet, which mostly works. And but it's a grand experiment. I believe it's a grand experiment. And the extraordinary thing is those people spent all the money they had in the world. And on April 4th, they will begin leaving those cabins for future generations. They don't own the cabins. The cabins have already been donated to Diamond Mountain. And they knew that going in, that on April 4th, they would be leaving. We have a special program for 3 months, April, May, and June. For 3 full months, they will be allowed to stay at their cabin. Technically, they can't live there. It's not legal, according to the IRS, right? We are a church. They can't build on our property a cabin and live there. They have to give it to the church. So they will be leaving their cabins. And they have a 3-month grace period. We will be supporting them during the 3 months. So if you are helping now, you have to stick it through the end of June. You can't give up before the end. After the end of June, I personally am going to take a financial support break. I'm paying all sorts of weird things. I'm paying some people's taxes, and I'm out of there, you know. I'm going to hand them all the forms and say, God bless you. I hope you had a good retreat because it's over now. And, and we can take a well-earned finance break, but until the end of June, we have to stick it. We have to keep our commitment to them, okay? So if you're helping, you should continue to help to the end of June, and don't even think about stopping, because me and Jigme will choke you. They're going to need help. They're going to need massive amount of help, okay? I remember coming out of Sri Retreat. We didn't know if anyone would remember us. We seriously didn't know. And we didn't know if there were 5 people who remembered us or 500. We didn't know. And it was very frightening to come out of retreat. We didn't know. You know when you're in prison? Do you know what they do to you when you get out of the state prison that we teach at? They give you $50 and they drop you off in Tucson. And then a lot of guys are just standing on the corner with their $50, you know, and they go rob a convenience store and they stand there and wait for the police to come and arrest them again because they don't know what to do. They want to go back to prison. 65% of the prisoners go back to prison within 3 years because they don't know what else to do, you know. So our retreatants are going to be very similar. They are prisoners in retreat cabins, and they're going to need a lot of support, emotional support. They're going to need people who say, okay, come and stay at my house. I made a rule, okay? I have a rule. They can only stay for 3 months, okay? Then you must, Geshe Michael said, you have to kick them out, okay? So 3 months you can put up with somebody. They say fish and guests stink after 3 days. 3 months we can handle it, you know. If you have an extra room, then get it ready for them, you know. If you have miles, airplane miles, be ready to donate it. They can't get home. If you have an old, what do you call it? If my old car is still around, 1980 Volvo, we could give them that. They're going to need all kinds of help. On April 4th, we'll start a 1-week program to give them a crash course in Rip Van Winkle Modern Life course, and they'll learn to use the new things on the web, and they'll learn to make a website, and they'll learn. We're trying to get them a yoga certification, an official one, like Yoga Alliance certification. They're all like better yogis than anybody already, but they need the paper, you know. And so we'll be doing all kinds of things to catch them up and give them a chance to re-enter life without stress for three. So it's really 6 months, right? 3 months and then 3 months. And help them not to waste what they gained, you see? So they gained a lot of realizations. If they get pushed right back into, you know, working at Burger King or something, it's kind of going to wipe out everything they gained. They need time to transform what they learned into service of the world and not be forced into bad decisions about where they're going to live or how they're going to make a living. You know, they need time to transition smoothly into their new careers and their new city and their new homes. And so I'm asking you to just think about it. I'm not asking for anything specific. I have a list. We're doing like 20 things to help them come out. And I'm going to pass this out. Can I ask Sal? Can you hand this out? Just start it around. There's a website that you can fill out this questionnaire. But the basic thing is look through the questionnaire. if there's something in there that attracts you, you know, like, yeah, I would like to go early and help them get their driver's licenses and their bank account and their passports. Like, I'll go 2 weeks early and work with them, you know. Or I can put somebody up in my house for, you know, they can come to Mexico City and stay. They can teach some classes for a couple of months and we'll get them back on their feet, you know. Or something like that, okay. Just, I can teach video editing. Or I can teach them to make some little YouTube videos about what they want to teach or something. So what you are already good at, maybe Phil can teach them choral singing and they can busk in Tucson with a cup. And, you know, you choose something that you're good at and that you would like to help them with. But don't ignore them, okay? Don't leave them. Everyone in this room can do something, you know, like, I don't know, just something that on that list, there's one thing that you're good at and that you enjoy doing. And then look over the list carefully, okay? They need help. It's very frightening to come out. The day I came out, I won't give you his name, but he put me in a car. He took me to McDonald's, and on the way he told me about 9/11. And it was like taking a knife and sticking it in my brain and just turning it around, you know, like I was freaked out, you know. Then someone said, had this great idea that I should go to Universal Studios for a tour. And that was like, I don't know, going to the hell realms for a day. And it was like that. Coming out, your mind is very subtle, on a very subtle level. Even, you know, hearing a horn honk is like, makes you very scared or strange, and, you know, so try to help them, okay? They have already helped us. They have left 30 cabins, meditation cabins. Starting on April 4th, any one of you can go to Diamond Mountain and do a 1 week retreat, or a 1 month retreat, or a 3 day retreat. It's set up for you. It's there for you, okay? And because of their hard work, because of their kindness, they gave everything they have. They're coming out with zero. Most of them have zero. They don't have $5, okay? So I think it's our responsibility. It's our last responsibility. Then we kick them out of the nest and good luck, you know? But 3 to 6 months, we should take care of them, okay? And help them find their life, their new life. Okay? Cool? So look over that sheet and take it home and think about it. There's a website on the first few lines, and you can sign up. You know, you can say, okay, I'll come on April 4th. I'll do a short video training workshop, and we can get them started on an iPhone, and they can learn to make a fundraising video for You Fund It or whatever it is. You pay for it? What is it? Huh? Kickstarter, yeah, something like that. You know, commit to come help them on April 4th. It will also be an awesome week. There will be really beautiful teachings. And I believe we will have some of our friends from China will be coming to teach some beautiful subjects. And it's just going to be a good weekend. So leave the week free. And we'll celebrate. We have a lot to celebrate, okay? No group in the United States has done a retreat like that, ever. They are like astronauts who just got to the moon, you know? So we should be ready to help them, okay? Yes? Fill out the form and submit it to Jigme, or better, I think easier for us if you go online today while you're thinking about it and sign up for something. Okay, I can help someone, I can put someone in my house I promise you 3 months. It's a 3 month deadline. You can kick them out and say I said so, okay? You can lock the door and put all their stuff outside. Okay. I don't want it to become a welfare thing. It's a transition. Okay. Okay, here we go. We have about 10 more minutes. We're doing the second of the seven parts of the Make Lovely Offerings. When Pabongka Rinpoche gets to this subject, his first comment is, only a fool would leave a fertile field unplanted. Okay? Only a fool would pass up a field that they could plant. So in Tibet, a land was very valued, very highly valued, very precious. And then if you owned an acre or half an acre, to not plant something for a year was considered very foolish, okay? It's just like you could be making something there. You could be growing something. You could be helping people. Why is that relevant here? Yeah, the garden is there. The tsokshing is there. The garden is there. So plant something. Give them. Offer them something. That's planting. And stuff will come back, okay? So don't be dumb, you know? Like, invest something in these holy beings. And of course, those things will come back to you 10 times, all right? So make offerings. Again, he repeats what we said yesterday. These particular beings are so powerful and so holy that even if your intention is crummy, it doesn't matter. You will get crops. Offer them something and beautiful things will happen to you, even if your intention is not pure, because they are so powerful, okay? All right. This section, starting with 83, is directly excerpted from a sutra called Palpoche, and that's part of the Kangyur. So these next few pages come from directly from an ancient sutra. This is a section in the sutra of Pelchen, Avatamsaka, where a bodhisattva named Samantabhadra describes how to make offerings. And we already talked about it, okay? This is Kundasangbo. In the translation, it's perfect goodness. So when you see perfect goodness capitalized, that refers to a bodhisattva, a very famous bodhisattva, who made these offerings that covered the sky and then did mantras that made it appear to the Lama, okay? That made the thing actually appear to the Lama. He imagined the sky covered with flowers, did a mantra, and because of that mantra, the teacher will see the flowers. Cool? Very cheap and efficient. Okay, so they made this into a separate sutra. They put a prostration at the beginning. I bow down to the realized one, to the glorious gentle voice become young. And then we start off on the actual words of the sutra written by Lord Buddha. Okay, this part is by Lord Buddha. I bow down to anyone in any corner of the universe who has reached enlightenment, who is reaching enlightenment, who will ever reach enlightenment. I bow with my body. I bow with my words. I bow with my mind to every single one of them, to these lions of living kind. Next page. I throw myself down before ever victorious Buddha, and by the power of the prayer of perfect goodness, okay, that's the bodhisattva's name. It's not just general goodness, okay. May each of them see directly in front of them copies of me equal in number to the atoms of the universe, each one bowing in perfect devotion. So, you can stand up before your meditation and do some Surya Namaskaras, okay? By the way, I know it may be obvious or maybe not, but what yoga people do in every yoga studio in the world, in the first 15 minutes of the yoga class, Surya Namaskar, is meant to be a prostration to high beings. It's not some kind of exercise, okay? It means, namaskar means to, I bow to your name. Namas means name, and I bow. It means I honor you, and I bow to you. So, of course, that's a prostration. That's bowing down, okay? I'm going to bring you some comments on the next verse. At this very moment, Buddhas equal in number to the atoms of the universe are sitting surrounded by their bodhisattva sons and daughters. Inside every atom there is. I close my eyes and see every emptiness there is, filled to overflowing with all the victorious Buddhas. This is true, and it's also a very nice meditation technique if you want to exercise your meditational powers, okay? If you want your meditation muscle to get stronger, there's a practice, and it's called Pelgom Chepa, and you can focus on something. Like, I'll take the microphone, and you go down into the microphone, and there's these little squares here, and you go down into one of the sides of the square, and then you go down into where the wires meet each other. This is mentally, right? Down into the wires. And then you focus on the left side of that wire, and you imagine an atom of the metal in the wire that's making the microphone cover. And you focus on that atom there. And then in that atom is a Buddha. And that atom is their Buddha field. And it's true. Okay, they do exist in every atom. Every atom of every object, your laptop, your cell phone, your car keys, every atom in that object is filled with Buddha paradises. And it's true. It's not imaginary. It's not a, what do you call it? Visualization. It's already true. Okay, Buddhas are there. A Buddha is living with all their world inside of each atom of the stuff around you. Your eyeglasses, your nose, your left eyebrow. Okay. And it's a beautiful thought. Okay. It's a very healthy thought. Oh, my bones are made of Buddhas, and my skin is covered with Buddhas, and the chair is filled with Buddhas, and my cell phone. Every time you call somebody, text somebody, when you push the buttons, you say, I'm tickling you, or, you know, like that. You know, it's a very healthy thing, mentally, spiritually, to imagine or to see how every object around you is filled with Buddha paradises. Every little piece of every object is filled with Buddha paradise. It's a very healthy thing, okay? Think about it sometimes. And that's a practice. That's one of the practices, Samantabhadra. So, you know, I was trying to find photos of this. And the Buddha I used was, there's a similar Buddha up here. These Buddhas were created by the Huichol people, who are the native people of Mexico. I think it is the largest tribe in Mexico. They're like Apaches or Navajo. And we are have a nice connection with them. We help out at the Huichol house for Huichols who get cancer. And I heard a very beautiful thing that over 450 people have come through the Buddhist group there to help Huichol house. So we are doing nice work there. Our group is doing nice work there. But the Huichol people offered me this Buddha, which they beaded, you know. They created a... It takes many, many, many hours, and they created a Buddha with beads, and they offered it to me. So I like that Buddha. And I couldn't, you know, I was looking up atoms online, and they just looked too scientific to me. So I did a water drop. But the idea is, imagine that there's a Buddha inside of every atom of the things around you. Is there some kind of fundraiser with this Buddha? Am I right? Isn't there, Paula? What's the deal? How's it work? It's a raffle? Yeah. By tomorrow? Okay, so this Buddha is going for... It's part of the raffle. Okay. And I have one, and I can say they're very special, and they work very well. And you should buy a ticket for the raffle. And I think the raffle will be held in January when we have our retreat there. Okay. But they're very beautiful, and it took many, many, many hours. So that's the story of the beaded Buddha. And it's a very healthy exercise to do that. So I encourage you to do that exercise. Okay, last verse for this afternoon. Well, let me give you some scripture, okay? This is from the scripture. Pabongkorn Pichai says, 1,000 people can look at a single stone. If I hold up this clock, then, you know, 50, 100 people can look at it. And there's no problem, you know. If Bertha's looking at it, it doesn't mean that Osiris has to wait until she's finished looking at it. And then he can see it. You see what I mean? 100 people's eye consciousness can rest upon this object at the same time. And that's not a problem, okay? 1,000 Buddhas can think about the same thing and their body goes there at the same time. 1,000 Buddhas can think about the tip of a needle and then be there because of, we said it yesterday, Sungjuk, right? Sungjuk. Where their mind is, their body follows. Okay? Where their mind is, their body follows. 1,000 Buddhas can rest on the tip of a needle. Okay? Then he describes prostrations, different ways of prostration. So I'll give you a 2-minute prostration review. I think the most important thing you should know is a large goal, one of the main goals of our Buddhist practice, the reason we're having classes in Phoenix for 14 years or whatever, the reason we're doing this together is that one day, you in deep meditation, you could see emptiness directly. You could see ultimate reality directly. It always makes me think of something in the Bible where Moses meets God in the form of a bush which is on fire. Okay, I don't know why, but God appears to Moses as a bush which is on fire. And if you reread that section, or more importantly, you watch the Charlton Heston version, Moses throws himself on the ground, you know, in front of this bush. He has to dig his face into the ground, into the dirt, you know. And that's true, okay? On the day you see emptiness, you will see Buddhas for the first time, okay? It's kind of cool because up until then, it's just, you just believe what other people are reporting. It's a kind of act of faith to be a Buddhist because you can't meet them. But on that day, you will meet them directly. You will meet Buddhas directly. And you know they are real. And it's a very, very, very beautiful thing. You must stand up and you must throw yourself down on the ground, face down, full prostration. It's a natural instinct for a human being to do that. Every human being will do that. Whoever sees a Buddha, without thinking and without planning and without wondering what you're doing, you will stand up and throw yourself on the ground. And you will stay there for quite a while, okay? Because you cannot stand in front of a Buddha. It's not possible. You will throw yourself on the ground. The minute you know it's a Buddha, which only you can know then, you will throw yourself on the ground. And then came all these prostration customs, okay? In Tibet, in India, even in Christianity, I guess, kneeling down, as you go down in my church, which is nearby here, it's a very beautiful church. It's still a beautiful church. I still go sometimes. I like the mass. I think it's cool. So you go down the aisle and you bow and you touch you genuflect, you touch your knee to the ground. And I believe all those customs came from the same place. Somebody saw God, Jesus, Buddha, and they bow. They have to get down and bow. So then all of those zillions of people bowing in churches or bowing in front of in a synagogue or bowing in a Buddhist class like we do, all of that comes from people who saw Buddhas and had to throw themselves on the ground. Burning bush incidents. Okay? They all came from the same place. Okay? So in the days since that, there have come to be different kinds of bowing. So let's cover them. All right? One is called kumchak. Kumchak means what you're doing before class is called a kumchak. Kum means, what do you call when you do this with your arm? This is kyang, this is kum. Like retracted, yeah, a retracted prostration. Those of you who know the Vajrayogini Tantra, there's a kyang kum going on with her legs. Okay, but one leg is bent and one leg is extended. That's called kum, and that's called kyang. So kumchak means you touch five parts of your body on the ground. Your head, your forehead, your two palms, and your two knees. And that's called a five-point prostration or kumchak, okay? Like when the plane comes down and touches down, then there's three things touching the ground, right? Hopefully. And when you do a kumchak, you're touching five things on the ground. Kyangchak is what? Full prostration. You spread your arms out and you do a full prostration. You can do that sometimes if you have a good carpet at the teaching place. And otherwise it can be a problem. But traditionally you'd stretch yourself out completely on the ground. Okay. People in Tibet sometimes walk from Guadalajara to Mexico City doing kyangchaks the whole way. But that's not culty. Okay. That's a tradition. Okay. That's called kyangchak. And my lama, he used to, I don't know, he would come into the temple and he'd be goofing, not goofing off, he'd be cleaning bowls or sweeping, and then suddenly he'd go. And you see the Dalai Lama doing that all the time. Like Dalai Lama passes some people and he's like, or, you know, and this is considered a prostration. Okay, you should know this is a mini prostration, okay? It's like, and you know, Dalai Lama leans back and goes, you know, like that. That's a prostration. Okay, just so you know, he's not just being friendly. He's like, that's a counts as a prostration. In Tibet, it's a custom. When you see something cool, when you see something spiritual, it could be those clouds out there right now, pretty awesome over the mountains, and you just go, you know, God bless you, Geshe Michael, that you did that karma like 10 years ago. It's awesome, you know. It means awesome. You're awesome. If you're at Costco and they're going to bind all the books at 6 o'clock in the morning, you're like, you know, and they don't have to know what it is. You see? It's just a private thing. It's a secret thing. You're like, you know, and it's very pleasant to do little secret symbolic things. It's a big part of Tantra, actually. We see somebody out here doing something kind for somebody else, you know, and you can just do that and keep walking. They say you don't have to stop walking. Just that and keep going, okay? Anytime you see something cool, be on the lookout during your day for beautiful things. Mother helping a child, somebody stopping for another car. You know, I'm like driving, I'm like, you know, that means I get down on my knees before you. You are so cool, you know. You let that person come in front of you. You know, and keep going, you know, okay, like that. It's a very beautiful custom. All right. There are karmic results for doing that. I'll give you some of them, all right. Physically, you get more beautiful, okay. It's as if you had put on makeup or something, or, you know. You get more physically. As the years go by, and you keep doing this, the cool things you see every few minutes, your face changes and your body changes and you get more beautiful, okay? The older you get, the more beautiful you get. It's very strange, okay? Second, your voice changes and you get a sweet voice. You get a gentle, sweet-sounding voice. People say, I like your voice, okay? I'm not a special person, but recently we sang a Sting song in the prison and somebody said, you sound just like Sting, man. And I'm like, yeah, he's always stealing my stuff. So anyway, your voice can change if you honor, just go around honoring people, right? Third and maybe most interesting to you, you will lose your fear of speaking in front of groups of people or doing performances in front of groups of people. If you do past one of the ancient karmic correlations is that you lose your fear of speaking in public or performing in public. I know it's hard to believe for someone who can't shut up, but the first time I was asked to speak publicly, I froze and I couldn't say a word. I had to sit down. You know, the first time I was asked to speak publicly Buddhism, I was like, and it was very embarrassing and it was very powerful. I couldn't speak. And I had to sit down, you know, and it was very embarrassing. And now I can't shut up, okay? So you're late already. Okay, next karmic results. Holy beings enjoy watching you do this. It makes them happy. Okay, every time you honor a person in traffic, or you honor a lady at Costco, or you know, honor one of your... Tomorrow you can do lots of these things, right? And you don't have to make it, you can just go... Rinpoche would be like, you know, you'd have to watch carefully and he'd be doing it all the time. And it means, I love that. That's a holy thing. That's a beautiful holy thing. I love to see Louise in the middle of all the group of people laying down on him, and he looks like a Buddha sitting there, and I'm like, cool, you know? And you can do that, okay? And when divine beings see you doing that, they're proud of you. They're like, oh, look, you know, somebody's smart enough to do these mini prostrations. You know, they get happy. They feel, they enjoy it. That's nice, right? Nice karma. CG means you become respected by other people, okay? People respect you. It's very frustrating not to be respected, right? You're saying, you're giving some good suggestion in a group and no one's listening to you. That's the opposite of CG. If you constantly honor people in tiny ways as you walk through the world, people start to respect you. Okay, it's a karma. It's a karmic result. People respect your ideas. People respect your suggestions or things that you do, which is pleasant. That's nice, right? It's very frustrating when you have a good suggestion and no one wants to listen, right? Okay, wealth, obviously, you will... what do you say? Your credit cards will get paid off. And you'll be comfortable, financially comfortable. Okay, prosperous. Last thing, obviously nirvana and enlightenment, okay? Karmically, to honor the people around you and to respect them in a small way with just your hand, you know, it's a very heavy karma for becoming enlightened, okay? So those are the benefits of this practice, prostration, okay? Almost done, okay? Hang in there. I have like just a few more things. And these I took out of the scripture, okay? I'm just giving you the highlights. Each grain of dust that you cover with your body during your prostration creates the karma to be president of the world later. That many times, okay? You can believe it or not, but it's true. Okay. Also, they say that extended prostration, the full prostration, is a very important practice in Tantra. And Pabong Rinpoche says that it was one of the favorite practices of Naropa, Niguma's partner. Okay, it was one of his favorite practices. It's a custom in our tradition, okay, watch my hands, to put your thumbs inside. Okay, that's just our immediate lineage, the lineage of Jetsun Kapa. The custom of our lineage is to put the thumbs inside. We don't go like this, okay? I do it sometimes in yoga or something because it feels good. There's some kind of channel thing going on. But traditionally, we put the thumbs inside and it represents offering your lama a jewel of your practice, okay? So you imagine, this is my practice. This is a jewel in my palms and I offer you that jewel, okay? So that's just a tradition that we have. When you do a prostration, it's customary to touch your body in four places as you move your hands, okay? So one is at the top of the head. And that means that it changes the chakra here, and you will gain the body of a Buddha, okay, up here. Then there's especially the tsukdor. Tsukdor is this bump on the top of the head. I hesitate to tell people because one American told me, I don't want that. I'm like, oh, okay. You don't have to have one. You know, but it's a, they have a slight protuberance here. The head comes up a little. Rinpoche had a very noticeably one here. And then you, that's a sign of an enlightened being. Then you touch here at your third eye. This is, in Tibet it's called Minsam. In Sanskrit it's called Bruvor Madhya. Bruvor is the dual possessive. Of the middle of the eyebrows, the two eyebrows, Bruvor Madhya, and you touch there. Okay. In the yoga tradition it's important. In Tibet we call Minsam. You touch there. That creates a kind of omniscience that the Buddha has, okay? And there's a little hair there in a Buddha. If you ever check closely, there's a little hair there. If you pull it out, it will reach to Jupiter. But people don't like that either, so I don't talk about it. Then then you touch your throat, at your throat, okay, one time. And that means, may I speak as an enlightened being, beautifully as a Buddha. May I speak. They're supposed to have a voice which has 60 high qualities. Yenlak Truchu, 60 qualities of a Buddha's voice. The most important is mentioned in the Yoga Sutra. It's a Sarvabhuta Rutas Jnanam. What is that? Sarvabhuta Rutas Jnanam. You speak all languages, okay? You speak English or you speak Spanish, and your audience could be speakers of 100 languages, and they will each understand you in their own language. It's also in the Bible, right? When they start speaking in tongues. So, when you touch here, you have to imagine that one day you will have the ability to speak in all languages. Automatically, you speak Spanish and everyone understands it in their own language. Okay? It's a very beautiful thing. I think you can get, what do you call, premonitions of it. You can get kind of close where it's easy for you to learn languages or, you know, like that. So touch here. And then when you touch at your heart, fourth, so the fourth stop is at your heart. One, two, three, and then four. Okay, and don't rush, okay? I see people going like, and Tibetans do that. They made so many prostrations, they're like, you know, take your time, you know. Touch each place gently and consciously. And the last place is at your heart, meaning I would like to have the mind of a Buddha. Okay, so that's just tradition, to touch those four places. Okay. Then it's tradition to go down slow and come up fast. Okay, that's a tradition. Going down slow means after I die, I ain't going down anywhere. Coming up fast means after I die, I'm going up fast. Okay, like that. It's just a statement of what you want to happen. Okay. Pabongkor Rinpoche mentions that the act of prostration fulfills both the goals of the seven limbs. What are the two goals of the seven parts that we're studying right now? One is to collect a good hit of espresso hit of good karma just before you meditate. And one is to clear out the things from your conscience. You can't meditate if something's on your conscience. If you just hurt somebody and you try to meditate, it's not going to work. You have to confess. Okay? A prostration has both powers. It collects good karma and it cleans bad karma. One prostration does both. Two more things, then we'll stop. No, I covered that already. Oh, we covered everything. Okay, we're done. So this evening we'll go on to... I really like the next verse, the next page, because it has a surf on it. And I love surfing. So it's a very beautiful photo. It's a real photo of the ocean. And we'll talk about the meaning of it tonight. Okay, let's do a mandala offering. Dedicate the karma with Venerable Phil. And then I think Esther might have some announcements. Yeah, okay. So whenever you're ready, Phil, Venerable Phil. Shri Bhargi Chokshi Mehto. Been a very sweet week, and it's very sweet to see everyone's performance coming together. If you still, I think it's not too late still, if you have a poem you'd like to read, or you know, a song you'd like to, even if you just want to play a recorded song or have us play it for you, or show a video clip that you like off YouTube. There's this awesome clip of a 3-year-old reciting a poem from memory, like a 10-minute poem. He's like some kind of miracle kid. And, you know, if you have something sweet like that, and offer something, you know. Give something. Tell Johnny O or Rob or Esther. Just give them anything that you'd like to offer, okay? Don't be shy. Do something. Don't miss out on tomorrow. You don't have to do it. You don't have to get up. Just tell them, download that song or play it. That's from me. Okay? Give them $2.99. And okay, don't be shy. Do something. Offer something tomorrow, okay?